Lucy led the way, and soon they could all see the dwarfs. They had a very odd look. They weren't strolling about or enjoying themselves, nor were they lying down and having a rest. They were sitting very close together in a little circle facing one another. They never looked round or took any notice of the humans till Lucy and Tyrion were almost near enough to touch them. Then the dwarfs all cocked their heads as if they couldn't see anyone, but were listening hard and trying to guess by the sound what was happening.
Look out! Mind where you're going! Don't walk into our faces!
All right! We're not blind. We've got eyes in our heads.
They must be pretty good ones if you can see in here.
In where?
Why, you bonehead, in here, of course. In this pitch-black, pokey, smelly little hole of a stable.
Are you blind?
Ain't we all blind in the dark?
But it isn't dark, you poor silly dwarves. Can't you see? Look up, look round. Can't you see the sky and the trees and the flowers? Can't you see me?
How in the name of all humbug can I see what ain't there? And how can I see you any more than you can see me in this pitch darkness?
But I can see you. I'll prove I can see you. You've got a pipe in your mouth.
Anyone that knows the smell of tobacco could tell that.
Oh, you poor things. This is dreadful. Wait.
Lucy stooped and picked some wild violets. Then she leaned across and held the fresh damp flowers to the dwarf's ugly nose.
Even if your eyes are wrong, perhaps your nose is right. Can you smell that?
None of that! Oh, how dare you! Oh, what do you mean by shoving a lot of filthy stable litter in my face? Ouch! There's a thistle in it too! Who are you anyway?
Earthman, this is Queen Lucy, sent hither by Aslan out of the deep past. And it is for her sake alone that I, Tyrion, your lawful king, do not cut all your heads from your shoulders. Proved and twice proved traitors that you are.
Well, if that doesn't beat everything, how can you go on talking all that rot?
Rot?
Your wonderful lion didn't come and help you, did he? Thought not. Now, even now, when you've been beaten and shoved into this black hole just the same as the rest of us, you're still at your old game. Starting a new lie. Trying to make us believe we're none of us shut up and it ain't dark and heaven knows what.
There is no black hole. Saving your own fancy, fool. Come out of it!
Leaning forward, Tyrion caught the dwarf by the belt and the hood and swung him right out of the circle of dwarfs. But the moment Tyrion put him down, he darted back to his place among the others, rubbing his nose.
What did you do that for? Banging my face against the wall?
You nearly broke my nose again.
Oh, dear. What are we to do for them?
Let them alone.
As Eustace spoke, the earth trembled. The sweet air grew suddenly sweeter. A brightness flashed behind them. All turned. Tyrion turned last because he was afraid. There stood his heart's desire. Huge and real. The golden lion, Aslan himself. And already the others were kneeling in a circle round his forepaws and burying their hands and faces in his mane as he stooped his great head to touch them with his tongue. Then he fixed his eyes upon Tyrion. And Tyrion came near, trembling, and flung himself at the lion's feet. And the lion kissed him and said,
"Well done, last of the kings of Narnia, who stood firm at the darkest hour."
Aslan.
Aslan, could you, will you, do something for these poor dwarves?
Dearest, I will show you both what I can and what I cannot do.
Do you hear that? Yes. That's the gang at the other end of the stable trying to frighten us. They do it with a machine of some kind. Don't take any notice. They won't take us in again.
Aslan raised his head and shook his mane. Instantly, a glorious feast appeared on the dwarf's knees. Pies and pheasant and trifles and ices, and each dwarf had a goblet of good wine in his right hand. But it wasn't much use. They began eating and drinking greedily enough, but it was clear that they couldn't taste it properly. They thought they were eating and drinking only the sorts of things you might find in a stable, a bit of old turnip or a raw cabbage leaf. And they raised golden goblets of rich red wine to their lips and said,
"Fancy drinking dirty water out of a trough that a donkey's been at. Never thought we'd come to this."
But very soon, every dwarf began suspecting that every other dwarf had found something nicer than he had, and they started grabbing and snatching and went on to quarrelling, till in a few minutes there was a free fight and all the good food was smeared on their faces and clothes and trodden underfoot. But when at last they sat down to nurse their black eyes and their bleeding noses, one said,
"Well, at any rate, there's no humbug here. We haven't let anyone take us in. The dwarfs are for the dwarfs. The dwarfs are for the dwarfs. The dwarfs are for the dwarfs."
You see, they will not let us help them. They have chosen cunning instead of belief. Their prison is only in their minds, yet they are in that prison and so afraid of being taken in that they cannot be taken out. But come, children, I have other work to do.